In our pastoral work day by day, we come back to a familiar story. One man asked another, "Tell me in just one word, how is your life?" His friend replied slowly, "In one word? In one word, my life is, well, good." Sensing something, the man asked again, "Then tell me in just two words, how is your life?" And his friend replied slowly, "My life in two words? In two words, my life is not good." Both the brevity of life and the strange estrangements of our experience in life place us, if we are honest, come Sunday, somewhere between the first and the second replies, between good and not good. We know the thrill of victory and the agony of betrayal. We know the joy of birth and the pain of death. We know the exuberance of growth and the hurt of departure. The Gospel of John ended last week with its concluding sentence, "These things are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name." Jesus, Lord and God, doorway both to allegiance and to reverence. Jesus, Word incarnate, Good Shepherd, feeder of thousands, alchemist of water and wine, healer of the blind, raiser of the dead, doorway to grace, freedom, love, spirit, community, and friendship. Only believe, only believe. Startling then, today's lesson, John 21, added perhaps 10 years after the gospel's original conclusion. A simple meal of 153 fish, breakfast with Peter, different language and imagery here, a different, now heroic role for the robing and disrobing Peter here, a different voice for the beloved disciple here, a different reflection on death and life here, a different prediction of Peter's martyrdom here. What is the meaning of this strange addition to this edition of the gospel, this strange breakfast? Just this: for all the grace, freedom, and love, all the spirit, community, and friendship rightly trumpeted in the spirited fourth gospel, we people are still people. This chapter, 21, is about fishing and farming, about catching and tending, about boats and fields, fisher folk and shepherds. In church language, that is, John 21 is about evangelism and pastoral care. You are leading a Christian life. You are committed to the way of discipleship, the path of love. Then, and so, you will need to receive and give invitation, evangelism, and comfort, pastoral care. In a word, resurrection. In two words, evangelism and pastoral care, work and structure, laity and clergy, world and church. Breakfast is a simple meal, often the worst hour of the day, the worst food of the day, the worst attitude of the day, everything and everyone more human than not. But carried by resurrection, we re-enter the world of invitation and compassion. Every week, we are encouraged to make one invitation to another about what we find lastingly good. Come to worship with me. Every week, we are encouraged to offer one compassionate word to another from the source of lasting compassion we have known. I will pray for you. For public worship places us in the necessary presence of others who are not our own kith, kin, and kindred. With the child behind us, the student beside us, the professor ahead of us, the widow across from us, together this morning, we worship God. We perceive again the utter variety and actual need of others. It is a cautionary move against the prevailing winds about us that cause harm, including terror, including dehumanizing techno-communication, including distance drone aerial bombardment. We are reminded, seeing each other, hearing each other sing, A woman will receive that email. I might have seen her or her kith, kin, and kindred in church. A child could be harmed by such a weapon. I might have seen his kith, kin, and kindred in church. Public worship places us in the necessary presence of others who are not of our own family. So crucial, saving, significant then, a simple invitation, join me for worship. Then too, compassionate pastoral care, personal kindness, a willingness to listen, feed, tend, sheep to sheep, connects us to the deeper dimensions, those for which life is given. Many years ago, Martin Luther King sat in a prison cell in Birmingham, Alabama. He wrote that famous letter from Birmingham jail, which bears your rereading this afternoon, addressed to pastors, fellow clergy, who could not or did not or would not hear. He wrote, "When you suddenly find your tongue twisted and your speech stammering as you seek to explain to your 6-year-old daughter why she can't go to the public amusement park that has just been advertised on television, and see tears welling up in her eyes when she is told that Funtown is closed to colored children, and see ominous clouds of inferiority beginning to form in her little mental sky, and see her beginning to distort her personality by developing an unconscious bitterness." While most of us will not regularly write such a momentous letter, in our pastoral, that is our personal correspondence, we still write a little bit. You know, that is, of another's pain by gathering in community. And so when you sit down and put pen to paper or hand to key and select some caring words, you can do it with grace. Sorry, condolence, hope, help, prayer. You can imagine another opening the mailbox, the email box, seeing, holding the letter, removing the page, reading the card. Feed my lambs, tend my sheep, feed my sheep. It is not that the fourth gospel up to chapter 20 diminishes or discounts invitation and compassion, evangelism and pastoral care, laity and clergy. It's just that the writers up to then had bigger fish to fry and sheep to tend of another fold. So along came someone who wrote chapter 21 for us to remind us. In a word, good. In two words, not good. Your life in Christ requires invitation and compassion, beginning again every day at breakfast. The good news is that a restored Peter is there at breakfast with us. So Jesus speaks to us today from the edge of the shoreline. His voice, although we often mistake or mishear or misunderstand it, carries over from shore to sea, from heaven to earth. For us gathered here, the souls gathered here today, that voice, his voice, is the voice that makes life worth living. Within earshot of his voice, there are no merely ordinary days or nights or catches of fish or meals or questions or answers or friendships or loves or losses. Within earshot of his voice, there are no merely ordinary moments. When the master calls from the shoreline, "Children, have you cast the net? Bring some fish, have breakfast." No one who hears will dare ask, "And who are you?" For we know. Jesus speaks to us today from the edge of the shoreline. His disciples stumble through all the magic and grit of a fishing expedition. Many of us still find some magic in fishing, though few of us have had to depend on the sport for sustenance. But we know the thrill of it, the catch, the chance to feel the thrill of being in the right place at the right time. John Stuart Mill once wrote that understanding the chemistry of a pink sunset did not at all diminish his profound sense of wonder at the same sunset beauty. In fact, we might add, real understanding heightens true apprehension. Easter is a season of new beginnings. The promise of resurrection is upon us. Resurrection disarms fear. Resurrection ignores defeat. Resurrection displaces and replaces loneliness. Resurrection will not abide the voice that whispers, "There's nothing ordinary, extraordinary here. There's no reason for gaiety, excitement, or wonder here." Resurrection will not abide the easy and the cheap. Resurrection takes a daybreak catch, a charcoal fire, a dawn mist, fish, bread, and hungry, weary travelers, and reveals the Lord present and Peter there at the table with us. One failing of this world, whether we see it more clearly in the superstition of religion, the idolatry of politics, or the hypocrisy of social life, has its root in blindness to the extraordinary. But hear the good news. Come Easter, and we are meant to live in Easter, not in Lent. Life is for Easter. The King of Love, his table spreads, and the humblest meal becomes breakfast with Peter. A chance for change, for new beginnings. Therefore, Christian people, as we work and fight, play and pray this week, let us resist with joy all that cheapens life, all that dishonors God, all that mistakes our ordinary sin for the extraordinary love, power, mercy, and grace of God. That is, let us open the doorway to real change. Real change is real hard, but it happens in real time when real people in real ways really work at it. Or at least, that is the good news of John 21, a late addition to a late edition of the fourth gospel, and its menu of freedom over breakfast with Peter. Take a look at the soteriology next door. That's a big word for health, salvation. You may be at a point where a different chapter or a different verse may bring healing. So, you have been raised a Roman Catholic and left the church, but now seek elsewhere a measure of meaning, belonging, and community as your faith develops. You're looking toward a soteriology next door, a way of salvation next door, a religious perspective and posture next door, a healing next door. Or you may have been raised a Protestant and left that church, but now seek elsewhere a measure of meaning, belonging, community as your faith develops. You're looking toward a soteriology next door, a way of salvation next door, a religious perspective and posture next door, a healing next door. Or you may have been raised in a mainline church, but having left that fold, now you seek elsewhere a measure of meaning, belonging, and community as your faith develops. You're looking toward change, toward a soteriology next door, a way of salvation, religious perspective, and posture next door. Good for you. Find your way forward. Sometimes a new look at salvation for a new need in life is the very gospel of freedom. John 21, if nothing else, gives biblical currency to such courageous change on your part. And we are with you because we are for you. As you may, this season, walk up the steps to another house within the lasting, loving, large neighborhood of salvation. That is, there are many faithful ways of keeping faith. There are many ways of keeping faith. Hear the good news as well, that forgiveness is about the future, not the past. Stephen Bauman reminded us of this past week. The past is finished, unchangeable. There's no changing what has happened. We may revisit by memory travel, and we may relearn by historical excavation, but the past is what it is. It's done. Forgiveness is not about the past. That is what the church discovered at Easter. Easter is not about Mary's misunderstanding, nor about Thomas's doubt, nor about the disciples' fear, nor about the worst of horror, the cross. All that is set forever in the past. There's no changing it. Forgiveness opens the future. Forgiveness does not change the past, but opens up a new future, a free future, a joyful future in spite of the past. That is what makes Easter such a miracle. That is what makes Peter fit company at breakfast. He's good company, given his story over the 153 fish. He has a new life, a new open future. He has a new future in spite of the past. Hear the good news that forgiveness is about the future, not about the past. Or this week, reclaim the power of conversation in a cyber-held world. Would that we could, including breakfast, understand the power and lasting meaning of fellowship at our tables, all of them. Our bodily nourishment requires this pause, this consumption, this energy, but our spiritual nourishment requires the words spoken and heard during this pause, this consumption, this energy. If you've been recently around a convivial meal, around a conversational table, around a gathered companionship, well, you know. Friendship is conversation. Love is conversation. Marriage is conversation. Community, real communion, community, real consanguinity is mightily and in some ways totally conversation. So the disciples are around a fire, charcoal fire, eating breakfast with a restored leader, Peter. If you're not indulging in at least one decent conversational meal a day, you're missing the mark. Fast food is real, but not fast conversation. Reclaim the power of conversation in a cyber-held world. Or feel free to shake the dust from your employment feet and find another job. You know, now that the economy is a little better, or at least for some, it is a little easier to say what needs saying in any case all the time. You have one life to live. If what you are doing with your body is killing your soul, it's time to quit. There are 60 ways to leave your employer, as Paul Simon said, sort of. Make a little plan, Stan. Easter breakfast with Peter is just the time to converse about this in a forgiving mode in the light of the soteriology next door. Hear the gospel, sursum corda, lift up your hearts. Real change is real hard, but it happens in real time when real people in real ways really work at it. Or at least, that is the good news of John 21, a late addition to a late edition of the fourth gospel and its menu of freedom over breakfast with Peter. Amen.